Aloha.
Hello and welcome. We're back from the BallerLifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brian Beckner. Thank you for joining us. Episode 380. I think. Of the show, let me check my notes. Checks his notes. I wrote down 379 last time, so it must be 380. Episode 380, thanks for joining us. This is, we're doing, we've reviewed a movie for the middle-aged white guys in our audience, of which I'd imagine there's a couple. We're going to talk about Tin Cup, the Kevin Costner golf movie. He likes to do sports movies so he can show off his arm, his golf swing, etc. So we did Tin Cup, a movie I had never seen. It's 25 years old, never saw it till a couple weeks ago when we watched it. Oh, also joining us, of course, Ed Daly will be there. He's way late on his summer sojourn with his family. So I'm here solo, but we pre-recorded the Tin Cup episode, Ed and I, with special guest Travis Rogers, the official golf correspondent of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. The guy knows a lot about golf. He's got lots of thoughts on golf movies. So we thought he'd be a perfect guest for that. A lot of people heard on my stereo show. If you're not following me on stereo, go there, get the app. The link is in my bio on Twitter. It's just stereo.com/Brian Beckner. Download the app. Get that so you can hear the bonus shows we do there. I do a bonus show for Trend Lightly, the other pod I do, every Tuesday and Friday there, plus intermittently do other shows with other people. They're fun. They're live, so you can listen to them on your phone and you can interact. There's a way to leave messages. So call in, get the stereo app via my link. It's free to you, but I get a couple bucks when you get the link, when you go to my link. So get the stereo app via my link and listen in when we do shows there. It's fun. They're fun. They're funny. And a lot of the people you hear here show up there in terms of our guests, our voicemailers, the regulars, the people from Twitter. I was gifted a huge sigh of relief today, and I hope that the details of this conversation can stay between us, because I got a new phone a couple weeks ago. I went for the tiniest iPhone, the iPhone 12 mini. I got the mini iPhone in mint green, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I have a small phone. Small phone is the shit. It's back to the old Motorola Samsung flip phone days. It's fire. It's just a little thing in my pocket. It's not bothering me. There's a lot of people want to make fun of my fingers and stuff, my hands and fingers. But with that big old iPhone X, it was hard for me to reach the top corner a lot of times to close windows. So now it's easy to do with my little tiny phone. But when I got my new phone, I air quotes traded in my old phone. And the reason I got a new phone is because my old phone was going jank. I dropped it so many times that I had to get the screen replaced. I had to get the screen replaced twice at least. And the place I go to my guys in Huntington Beach that replace the screen for me, I go there, you go in there and I go, hey, I want a new screen. And then they go, well, if you want OEM, it's $220. And that's the good screen, right? And they go, but if you want the Chinese knockoff, it's $160. And I'm like, well, I don't give a shit. And they're like, this colors just won't be as bright. It's not as good. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. So I get the cheap one. I did it twice, like I said, because I dropped it again. And but the first time I did it, the phone did start. The screen was not as good. Like you touch it, like wouldn't touch exactly in the right place. And there was a lot of sketchy things happening. But eventually I had to get it replaced again. I got the cheap one again. And then it was really going haywire. Like it would the screen would go all saturated colors, like puddles of colors. And I'd have to turn it off and turn it back on. And then randomly it would just start calling people. Like if the screen was on, the phone would think you were clicking some apps and shit. And I would be not touching any apps. And it would just start opening apps. And it would sometimes it would call people. Like one of the apps it would open would be the fucking phone. And it'd start calling people. Or it would start texting people. Or there was a couple times it came close to sending people some pictures from my camera roll. And that's happened to me before. Not by my choice. So I got a little scared. Also, if I was in the... A couple times when I was in the Instagram, what's it called? Instagram video or whatever. It would try to call people from there. Anyway, I was like, I got to get a new phone. So, because I wasn't if I was bought another screen, I'd buy the cheap one again. It's just, kept going back. So finally, I was like, all right. Thought somebody was at my door. Sorry. Door to the studio. So finally I'm like, okay, it's time to break down and get a new phone. I want the small phone anyways. They're having a deal. But the deal was you can trade in your old phone for credit if it's in good working condition. And I'm like, well, how much do they test these? Like, are they going to go on Instagram and accidentally see if it accidentally clicks some likes or tries to post a weird picture from your camera roll? Cause it does that, but they're probably not going to know that. Like they probably give it a cursory inspection. Like when you bring back your rental car or your leased vehicle, they're not popping the hood. They're not getting into the electronics to check the water damage. So I assured them, I got the new phone, went to the Apple store and I got the new phone, and then they send you a box to mail back the old phone. And I wanted the credit, And so I was sweating it. I was pretty worried. And then just a little while ago, that's why I bring this up now. Because this was a week ago I sent it back. Just a little while ago, I got the all clear email from Apple. Your phone has been accepted. Yes. Full credit, $220. Yes. So, hey, let's keep that between us, all right? I don't feel like there's anybody at Big Phone listening right now that's gonna rat me out, which I appreciate. I kind of rambled last time. So I'm not going to go too long this time with the intro because I want you guys to get most of the movie. As I've alerted you to before, if you're a Red Circle subscriber, I post the whole show without commercials to our Red Circle page. Go to if you want to subscribe, you can just click the link in the show notes right now. It's $5 a month. You get the whole show without commercial interruption. Plus any bonus stuff, all the bonus stuff we do there. If you're not a subscriber, that's cool too. And you get most of the show. It's if we go 2 hours, I decided I'm not giving away 2 hours for free. I'll give you an hour and a half. And the rest for the real fans is behind the paywall. And that's it. That's how we're going to do it from now on. So if you subscribe, you get more. You get everything. If you don't subscribe, you still get a shit ton. So listen, rate, and review. Tell your friends. Click the link at the top of the... Go to ballerlifestyle.com. Click the link at the top of the page and you can subscribe to our red circle there. Do us a solid. One thing I was in, a lot of you know that follow me on Instagram or Twitter. Sorry, guys, I'm brain dead. I was in Las Vegas this weekend with my girlfriend, Shay. It was her birthday. Happy birthday, baby. We had a killer weekend, the two of us, and it was just shenanigans. Super fun. We went to the UFC. Saw Conor McGregor break his legs. President Trump, my president. Donald Trump was there. It was awesome. The whole thing was amazing. But while we were there, I had an encounter. I went downstairs to get some provisions for the room, some waters, some cold beers, a few claws, a couple high noons, just, you know, have a few things to drink while we're getting ready to go out. And I went downstairs and I had an encounter with a couple Midwestern women while I was in the shop, and I came back and told Shay about it, and she made a tweet, and everybody that follows her at I'm So For Serious saw the tweet, and a lot of you were responding and they're very funny. The tweet is, I would never wish COVID on anyone, but if I did, it would be on these two white women in Vegas wearing matching Drunk Wives Matter t-shirts that just hit on my boyfriend. And that's, I mean, hit on might be a little bit of a stretch. I had an encounter with them. I was stunned by their patently offensive Drunk Wives Matter t-shirts. I was like, wow, they're just putting it out there. But I don't think they recognize the offense. Like, I feel like sometimes intent, you have to like give a little space for intent. Not that I'm defending them, but I don't think they recognize that. I think they just thought it was funny phrasing. They didn't realize the offensiveness of that phrase. But they were nice to me. And so a lot of people wondered what they said. Take, for instance, let me see. Oh, Telly Tuput, Kid Rock. They can smell, I can't do Kid, oh, Kid Rock voice. They can smell an anti-vaxxer from a mile away. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, Telly. That's patently false. Here's another one from Telly. They touch his fat little titties. Not cool, Telly. Here's another one. You look like a fella that puts his shopping carts back. What's your room number, sweetie? That's from Darvin, the OC. Pretty funny. Hey, cutie, you work at the Trader Joe's by UNLV. That's from LSU Lala. Another one from Darvin, the OC. You look like a guy, that wears a weighted vest while walking. DM me later. All these things are true about me. None of these are what they said. What else? You look like a meat stick kind of guy. Can I buy you a drink? Darby in the OC was really on fire. Dolomite D. I like your perm. I love your rings. What's that one mean? That's also from Dolomite D. Rick Romo says, may I say great porn stash, sir? Pretty good. What? Again, Dolomite D. What is hiding in that fanny pack? Also funny. Is there any more? 420 boobs says they're feeling that sweet, sweet ringworm vibe. Yeah, they just complimented my outfit. I was rocking like a terry cloth set that I have. So it was like short terry cloth shorts and like a button up terry cloth shirt matched. And the Drunk Wives Matter girls liked that. And they told me. They mentioned that they liked it. And that was the extent of our interaction. I said thank you. And I bought my provisions and I moved on. But good reaction from everybody that responded with their own guesses. No one quite got it, but yours were much funnier. Okay, guys. Really appreciate you listening. Love everybody being involved and being a friend of the show. It means the world to me. I just wanted to kind of touch base with you a little bit. Oh, wait, hold on. Ed called in. I forgot. We have a couple voicemails. Let's do those.
He's so easy to hate. Your time he likes to waste. His calls are far from great. His calls are far from great. He's such a stupid fuck. He seems down on his luck. His voicemails really suck. His voicemails really suck. No one's enjoying him. He's so annoying. Plus so fucking boring and worthless. But he's got nothing else to do. And he's even worse than Ish. His thoughts are useless shit. He's fat and got big tits. He's meant well in Gardenia.
Okay, this is Ed Daly said he was going to call in, and I see there is a message here from him, but I have some concerns as the message appears to only be 17 seconds long. So could be an epic voicemail fail here. Let's find out. Let's check in with dear friend of the show, co-host of the show, Mr. Ed Daly. Yeah. There's nothing there, buddy. There's no sound. It's just 17 seconds of silence. Thought maybe we'd at least, like, maybe it was like a butt dial or something. I mean, you said you were going to call in with your thoughts on the Bible Belt. And I was like, oh, me. When I saw it was 17 seconds, I'm like, well, maybe he only had one thought about the Bible Belt. Apparently, he had zero thoughts about the Bible Belt. Interesting. Well, maybe he'll catch us up when he gets back in time. In time? I'm telling you guys, I'm in a bad way. Well, I got to sneeze. Oh, my God. I lost it. Okay. There's another voicemail. Let's see what's going on with this dude. Let's redeem ourselves here.
Long time, first time. This is Miles, currently in Bend, Oregon, on vacation with my in-laws, which is hard enough. And I'm listening to last week's episode, Team Current episode, by the way, except...
You're a hero, Miles. You're a hero for everything you said so far, and you're bringing good energy. I like where this is going.
For Bachelor lifestyle, I'm hetero, so don't listen to those. Anyways...
You should really be listening to The Bachelor Lifestyle, even if you don't watch The Bachelor. Actually, we do The Bachelor Lifestyle, so you don't have to watch The Bachelor. Speaking of that, can't wait to tell Jay Stu on this week's Bachelor Lifestyle. But when I was at the UFC, we were in a suite. So I was on the club level or whatever they call it at the T-Mobile Arena. And I saw a light... bright shining light walking towards me, and I realized it was former Bachelor contestant Tyler Cameron. Whew. Gorgeous. What a babe. I'll tell Jay Steele about it later. You should listen to that show, though. It's good.
Unnecessary shots at my favorite band, Fish, mentioning him in the same breath as the Jim Blossoms. Sorry, had a few. Fucking total bullshit, Ryan. Like, I can't wait for an angsty tweet from you. Like, oh, I like Wilco. Like, here's, you know, like Hotel Fox Fuck. Like, I'm feeling really emo. Here's my favorite song. Like, people say about Fish, it's better on drugs. What music does that not apply to? If it doesn't apply to your music sucks. All right? Just had to fire back because just like, really inappropriate, and mostly this community is like very positive. Love your show, love you guys. Like, you know, just really feeling the energy right now. But I see my mother-in-law walking back with my fish and chips to go order right now, and I can tell she's not very happy with your boy. But before I go, Gotta ask question from my wife. Does Brian own the movie Troy with Brad Pitt on DVD? And is that a lyric in the song that she hears, that she's woken up to in the middle of the night once a week? Need to know. Love you guys. Bye.
I love you too, Miles. I love that you're a little bit buzzed. I love that you're really fired up to defend the band Fish, which is just an insane choice. Although I do love that you know I like Wilco, and so you've chosen to raise your band up, Fish, who you've called a podcast to defend the music of, the jam band Fish, by denigrating my favorite band from Chicago, Illinois, Wilco. I mean, if we can both like different things, you don't have to knock my thing down to raise your thing up. I think my favorite thing about your call, though, is that your mother-in-law was bringing you fish and chips. I fucking love a good fish and chips. I love it. Who doesn't? What the fuck is better than fish and chips? Now, obviously, there's levels to fish and chips, but you get that fish and chips, you squeeze all that lemon all over the fish and the chips, right? You hit the fries with the lemon too, trust me. Then B, you do the same thing. You don't go too crazy. The flavor's good, but sometimes it can ruin the breading if you use too much. You hit it with just a little bit of that salt, malt vinegar. I was thinking salt malt. It's a whole different reference. You hit it with a little of that malt vinegar. You also splash that on the fries. The whole plate gets it. The whole fesh, the whole chips, it all gets the malt vinegar. Then you tell them immediately, they drop it in front of you. Oh my God, I'm gonna sneeze. Oh, now it goes away. If I didn't say it, it wouldn't go away. Then you tell the server that brings it to you immediately, hey, can I get some more tartar? Anything else I can bring you? Yeah, can you bring me more tartar? Another beer and some more tartar, because they never give you enough. Because you got to smash that fish. You break it open because it's too hot inside, right? It's always too hot inside. So you got to break open the fillets, crack them open, and let some of that steam blow out of there. And look at that beautiful, chunky, white fish in there. It's usually like some cod or some haddock. Whatever. I mean, if you go to a nice place, it might be like halibut. Either way, it doesn't fucking matter. It's amazing. You let it cool off for a second because it's going to burn your fucking mouth. Then you gob it with a bunch of that tartar. Slop it in there. Get a whole bunch of that tartar on there and just take a nice big bite. And you got the lemon. You got the malt vinegar. You got a little crunch because you didn't put too much malt vinegar on it. Even though the malt vinegar is delicious, you want to maintain that crunch. And you got the heat of that tender white meat fesh inside there. And you're fucking that up. But then also you need the tartar because the tartar is so fucking good. You're going to start dabbing those fries in that tartar too. That's why you got to say, hey, bring me another ramekin. Hit me with another ramekin of this tartar because guess what? This ain't enough. One ramekin of tartar is not enough for an entire plate of fish and chips, which is a delicious pub food staple that I will get all the time, mostly in the winter months. So I like that about that call, Miles. I don't own any movies on DVD. Well, I mean, I do have some in the garage, but mostly rock and roll concert films. But I don't own a DVD player, nor do I think I have a computer with any kind of DVD. I have no way of playing a DVD in this residence. So no, I don't own the movie Troy on DVD. I'll take it a step further. Much like the movie you're about to hear us review, I never saw Tin Cup till a couple weeks ago. I've never seen Troy. Never seen it. I know Eric Bana's in it. Gorgeous. I know. Oh, wait, is Colin. Fuck, what's his name? Colin. He's a good actor. He's in that movie, The Lobster. Killing of a Sacred Deer. Colin Sexton. No. Colin Lorenzen. Colin. You guys know his name. Fuck. What's his name? Colin something. He's Irish. He's a little guy. And one time somebody showed me a sex tape of his that got released. And I'll just say this. He's not a little guy everywhere. That's all I'll say. My dude is dicked up. Which kind of makes sense. Then you see him act. And he basically swings his big dick around while he's acting all the time. Because he's such a good actor. He was a movie star for a while. I think he kind of got into the drink and maybe the yayo, who knows, but he's rebranded as less of a movie star and just a good ass actor. What the fuck is his name? Colin. Is he even in that movie? Troy? I know Eric Bana's in there and I know Brad Pitt is in there and I know, and I believe Colin guy whose last name I can't remember is in there. Anyway, no, I don't own it. I've never seen it, but thank your wife for asking. I appreciate it, Miles. You're a funny guy. Feel free to call in anytime you would like. We appreciate it. There's a couple. Let's see. I'll do the emails next week when Ed gets back because there's a few. They look kind of long. And I'll save them up. So if you have emailed, continue to email. mailbag@theballerlifestyle.com is the email address. Continue to reach out there and we will catch up on everybody's emails next week. Okay. Appreciate everybody listening. Jump in with me. Let's listen to a little bit of the Baller Lifestyle podcast review of the 1996 Golf Classic. I don't even know. Tin Cup. Thanks, guys. So, as I said before, we're talking about an important movie, a sports movie. This is, after all, a sports talk show. Let's get into it. I'm joined, as always, by Ed Daly. Ed, what's up?
Hey. Yep. This is, what year was this?
1996. It's a different time.
Okay. It was a lot of pleats.
Yeah, it was, big pants. As you can hear, we're also joined by good friend of the show and guy with strong opinions on Pop-Tarts, we've learned, Travis Rogers. Travis, what's up, buddy?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Travis.
Hey, nice to have you.
I'm thrilled to be back. I always love doing the Baller Life.
Yeah, I was trying to think what, because your Skype wasn't too far down the list. What was the last one we did?
Year in Review, I think.
Oh, year. Yeah, the year. Yes.
Because you're in review, and then you and I did the tiger thing.
Oh, right. But that was that was live. Yeah. We did that live. Did you? But what about the what's that? Cobra Kai? Were you involved in that?
I don't think I was. Yeah. No, I remember because I remember listening to that. Steve. I didn't participate.
Yeah, that was
Reality Steve was all over that.
That was Reality Steve, whose person.
He had a lot of very strong opinions on that.
Yeah, he likes.
He went.
Yeah.
Didn't he see it in the theater through the Phantom Events?
No, he bite your tongue. Fathom Events. I believe he saw like a re-airing of one of the Karate Kids via a Fathom Events ticket.
Perfectly normal.
But then when season three of Cobra Kai came out, you know, Steve lives in Dallas, which is Central Time.
Came out at like 1 a.m.
Yeah, it came out, I think, at 2 a.m. And he watched the entire season before taking a morning nap.
That's a totally normal decision. Really normal.
Most people did that, I think. I think if you collected everybody that watched Cobra Kai, and I am among them, I think that most people, like probably something 85-90% of the people, just stayed up till 2 and watched it from beginning to end.
I remember
everybody was tired that next day.
I remember when we were like, hey, we're going to talk about Cobra Kai. Let's do it. And I had watched like maybe half of the first season. And I was like, okay, we'll do it on Friday. Let's do it Friday. I'm all fired up. Let's do it Friday. And then I realized, because I thought I'd blaze through the rest of it, and then it came Friday, and I still had like 6 episodes to watch. And I was just like sweating. I was like, you know, it was like, I gotta push through. Like, I needed somebody to come like splash water in my face and like shake me. Like, come on, Brian, watch the rest. You can do it.
Whenever I saw that show, I mean, I watched it and I enjoyed lots of it, but I kept thinking to myself, Trav was ahead of this. Yeah. He hated Daniel when we did the first review. Each Daniel scene in Cobra Kai, I wanted to mash his face in.
So here's the good news about that show, because I kind of did this after season one because I was just about out. I disliked him so deeply that
he's awful.
He's awful and he ruins it. But if you just watch the scenes with Johnny Lawrence, the plot, as unimportant as it is, still makes sense. And you get all the good parts. So you just watch the Johnny Lawrence scenes and you're 100% up to speed.
And Johnny scenes are all great.
Well, it's because he can actually act.
He's an actor.
Yeah, he's a professional actor.
Yeah. It's like back in the day when you used to watch like those shows, the series that were on HBO, like Dream On, and you'd be like,
right.
Why do they show tits at least once an episode? You'd be like, just get to the tits. Like, let's get to the tits so I can. And you know, that was before you could fast forward everything. And then, and so Cobra Kai's like that, where it's like, just give me another Johnny scene. Like, I don't care about the rest of the shit. Just more Johnny. Somebody sent, there's a super cut on YouTube of just the Johnny scenes.
Oh, I got to see that.
Yeah. That sounds delightful.
He's great. But they're making a new season. It'll be out soon. And I imagine.
Karate's Bad Boy.
Yeah,
Terry Silver.
No, not Mike Barnes. I don't know if Mike Barnes makes an appearance.
No, but
I think Terry Silver is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Mike Barnes doesn't have a lot going on. I'm sure he'll be back.
He's available.
You know, Terry
Silver. Karate Boy is available.
You know, well, what about Snake and Dennis?
Oh, the two henchmen?
Yes.
They got to be jailed.
Yeah.
Snake and Dennis are probably in Lompoc.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. Not on.
Like Dutch.
Dutch
is locked up.
They did Dutch dirty in Cobra Kai because they're like, oh, sorry, Dutch couldn't make it. He's doing 25. Yeah, yeah.
Retired from acting, which I didn't realize he ever was an actor.
Well,
he was just a psychopath.
He's got that.
Wandered onto the set and started kicking ass.
He's like, I got so much peroxide in my hair. I just need to go crush somebody.
Dutch has that Steve McQueen money. And, you know, Steve McQueen, it's like, hey, Steve McQueen wiped his eyeball with this hanky. And somebody will be like, oh, I'll give you $50,000 for that.
So, that's right. He is a McQueen.
Yeah. So Dutch is living large. I think he races cars, which is like the total rich guy hobby. All rich guys love to race cars.
He's chasing his dad from Bullet. He wants the car scene.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Okay, guys. So we're talking about Tin Cup. This is a movie I had not seen until yesterday.
Ever?
No. What do you mean, ever?
I hadn't seen it in a while since yesterday. No, ever.
I'd never seen it.
I saw it in the theater.
You did?
Me too. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Trav, you don't even go to the theater.
I did back then, before I had kids, and I would go to the theater occasionally.
Because you're a white guy that loves golf, and so this was like, you were just fucking erect to go see this. You're tumescent. You're like, oh my God, finally a movie for us! Yes! And
it kind of, we'll get into it, but the golf was pretty disappointing, quite frankly.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. Let's talk about let's do the trailer first.
Waggle it.
From the creator of Bull Durham and White Men Can't Jump.
The club head. Waggle the club.
Comes a story.
Oh! It's a pretty girl in such an ugly swing.
About men and women and the games they play.
Remember, those games are about trust, touch, and letting go.
Hi, darling.
Hi, honey.
Oh, no, not him.
You got it bad, huh?
Something about that chick.
I take it you're a feminist.
No one's ever saddled me with that one.
Well, you might try being saddled sometime.
Smell of leather, sting of a whip.
Yes! She must think I'm such a loser, lousy driving range pro.
Local legend Roy Tin Cup McAvoy, the best player to never hit the big time.
It's an easy game in this golf.
Wasn't going anywhere. Oh.
It's got to be the woman.
I thought you said it was a virus.
Well, a woman can have the same effect.
But ever since Dr. Molly Griswold got inside his head...
I think I'm in love with you.
What?
He's been changing his whole approach.
From the moment I first saw you, I knew I was through with bar girls and strippers and motorcycle chicks and...
Stunned, huh? Tell me you're not at least moderately attracted to me.
You have moments, Roy.
Yeah, well, you tell me which ones are my moments and I'll try and duplicate them.
Just thinking about how to get in your heart.
Come on, you guys.
You're all nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. Tin Cup. I like the, it had a very white guy, blues / country western adjacent soundtrack throughout.
I thought the soundtrack was awful.
Yeah. It's very, very.
It was like poor man's country.
Yeah. It's very niche. So this movie came out in 1996. It's a romantic comedy. It's made by that guy that makes all the, sports movies, Ron Shelton. He wrote Bull Durham, also strong.
That's why I saw it in the theater, because the first line of the trailer was like, from the guy who brought you Bull Durham.
That's exactly right.
And Can't Jump. I was like, I'm in.
Those were good movies.
Yeah.
Those were good movies. And I'm glad that you told me, Bri, that it was a romantic comedy, because my very first question was going to be, exactly what were they going for here?
Right.
Because it's not a particularly compelling romantic story. It's not particularly funny. There's a couple of good lines in it. It's not a great sports movie. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish.
Well, yeah. They
want to make you hate everybody by the end.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
It's so this came out in 1996. This it's hard to put into words just what a massive star Kevin Costner was at this time. He did a movie, another movie I've never seen, because you know you could just tell a movie's awful. You never have to see it. Dances with Wolves. It won every Academy Award in the same year that Goodfellas was also nominated. Yeah. It won every Academy Award, and this guy could write his own fucking ticket in Hollywood, and he has a very high opinion of himself, you can tell. So he was massive, and he loves doing movies where he can demonstrate that he's a good athlete. And the thing is,
right,
he is a pretty good athlete. Like he can swing a golf club, he can throw a baseball, and look, most of these fey actor types, they can't.
Drama dorks.
You know, they can't throw a football. Like you can't just put an actor in a football movie and try.
That's why Diddy couldn't be Steamin' Willie Beeman in
that's right. He couldn't throw a football.
In the movie he had a candy arm.
Ed's favorite actor, Jamie Foxx, played high school football. So he could throw a football, so they could put him in that movie, no problem. So this is a big 1996. This guy's a massive fucking star. It's a big get for him. And I think because of his star power, nobody could say to him, hey, man,
this movie sucks.
No, well, yes. It's inoffensive, though. I mean, it sucks, but
it's not shitty in the way that something is deeply shitty. It's just like, what am I doing here? Why is this? First of all, when I rewatched it today, that movie is about an hour too long.
It's so long.
It is. It's over 2 hours long.
Yes.
I remember when he gets to the U.S. Open, I was thinking, all right, we should be wrapping it up. And there's still like 40 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, I don't need to see every hole on Thursday.
Yes.
Let's pick it up a little bit.
That I didn't realize he was at the U.S. Open. I'm like, oh, this is another qualifier. It was very confusing. I mean, it was very easy for him to qualify.
Do you think that you didn't know it was the U.S. Open because he had the first tee time of the day and there were three people in the gallery? Yes, do you think that maybe that was something they should have spent some money on? I get it. It's 1996 and Tiger Woods hasn't shown up yet. Right. I get that. And this is literally right before Tiger showed up. But it's still the U.S. Open. Like, people would go to the U.S. Open. You didn't just kind of show up at the U.S. Open with no one there and there was nobody there.
Yeah.
How about we're skipping around, but the final day, he gets up at like 4 a.m. He's in the final pairing.
Yeah. He doesn't be up till 3.
I know. Yeah, like What's he doing so early? Is he just gonna like hang out at the snack bar? He's there when the people are getting the course ready in the morning. He's the first guy there.
Yes, there's a lot of problems in this movie, but my main thing is this guy was such a big star at the time that no one could pull him aside and be like, hey man, the accent, it's not working. Nobody's buying that you're a Texan, dude. Like, just how about you lose it? Just talk normal. Like, he did Robin Hood again. This guy was a big star at the time. He did Robin Hood and he just talked like an American the whole time. And that's fine.
In his defense, he did a poor accent in the first scene.
Right.
And he just went American.
Well, it does. Yes. Oh, I've never seen Robin Hood either. But
Robin Hood, I think he went with an accent for a scene.
To be fair, that Costner coming in and out of an accent is not unprecedented. Yes. Princess Leia had an accent for like half the movie, yes, and the other half, right, she was just Debbie Reynolds.
Well, she was coked out of her head, Trav.
She was bouncing between Studio 54 and Lucasfilm stages.
By the way, let's not sleep on 19-year-old Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, that's how she kept it tight in that LeMay bikini, you know?
Right.
She had to do it. Aerobics weren't invented. They didn't know jazzercise back then.
She was never hungry.
No. What they had was cigarettes and Colombian flake. Yes. That's how they kept it tight back then.
What else was she going to do at night in Tanzania when they were in the desert?
Yes. Good point.
Harrison Ford took her under his wing.
Yeah, I bet he did. I bet he did. Uh-huh. Hey, why not?
Weird at all. He was 33.
Her and Chewie. And Chewie.
Remember, he used to be a carpenter. Shared everything. So he was just enjoying the life.
Oh, yeah.
He was a carpenter, and then he got into the Lucasfilm universe.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Good gig.
Pretty good
gig. And now he's into crashing planes.
Right. That's his thing. And smoking tons of weed. Smoking all the weed. A couple things. So at the beginning, this guy's a driving range pro. Not a thing I've heard of. You mean he works at a driving range?
I just assumed he was running the driving
range. Well, he owned it. He owned the driving range.
But the pro thing, like, yes. What is that?
I don't know why they. So I don't know why they call
it a thing. That is a thing. Yeah, like even those super crappy driving ranges will have a air quote pro can give you lessons and all that kind of stuff. They exist. They not the kind that are like they're not the tour guys that play for money, and not even the guy that's like the head pro at a country club, which gives the members lessons. But there are driving range pros. It's like it's not even like single A baseball in that world. It's like, I don't know, like JV baseball.
Right.
It's baseball, but it's not really. And that's what those guys are.
So he's the guy that comes up behind a woman hitting and he grabs her by the hips and he's like, hey, let me show you how to do it.
You gotta rotate.
Oh, this is kind of like Earl Woods. I mean, Earl Woods also had a Winnebago. That's the point I'm trying to make. They keep calling him a driving range pro, but all I see is a homeless alcoholic.
Who has friends that just want to watch him fuck?
That's a whole nother topic. Can we discuss his living situation very quickly?
Yes.
Do he and Romeo live together? And did we ever get like that?
I think
they live together in the Winnebago.
Yeah,
they're like Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, he and Cheech. Well, Cheech is his caddy, and you know.
In quotes.
Yeah, you know what the caddy does. The caddy's got a lot of jobs. He helps you on the course.
Uh-huh.
He makes the dinner reservation.
Okay.
He gets the rental car. He wrangles the poon.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He wrangles the poon for you. If there's poon to be wrangled, you put the caddy on that.
Okay.
He gets the DUI. Like, it's like all the shit you don't want to do, that's why you got the caddy there. That's why you're hooking him up.
Why are they living together in a motorhome in the middle of nowhere? Because I feel like
this driving range is overstaffed. There's a lot
it really
of people
is.
There
it really is.
With one customer.
Also, very few, only the nicer driving ranges are illuminated at night. This is a driving range with no grass. But very well lit for night hitting.
People.
Yeah, there's no customers either. Yeah.
It's pretty hot in Salome. So right. maybe they didn't want to hit balls during the day.
Also, there's
paying for the lights.
Right.
Who's paying for those lights?
Exactly. And there's no
Doreen now.
There's no nearby golf course that we
No.
So what's like what are you hitting for? You're not going to go play anywhere nearby. You just hit to hit.
We need more details on Salome. Like what yeah. is it? Like why did the doctor relocate there? Yeah. Why did Roy decide to set up shop there? Why are he and Romeo forced to live together in squalor in an RV? Yep. There's a lot of unanswered questions.
Question. What's the bathroom situation like? Are these guys sharing the toilet in the fucking Winnebago, or do they wake up in the middle of the night and they cruise down to the actual driving range like structure to blow it out? Like what are these guys?
But not
it's confusing.
Not just Cheech and Costner, the whole gang, yeah. the guy, the cook from A Different World, the black guy, the big guy with the beard. Like, you don't want to drop an anchor in your little Winnebago.
No,
what's going on?
Why aren't those guys at work? They just linger.
Their job is to watch Costner fuck. That's all they do.
You know what it is? Those guys are on disability. They're collecting checks.
Yeah, SSI.
Geez. Yes. Yeah. They're collecting checks. They got nowhere else to be. It's Salome. There ain't shit to do.
Anyone who looks like Rene Russo strolling through like one of these types of towns, the oil tycoon's going to scoop her up.
That's true.
She's just like hanging out with these dusty dudes.
They never make it clear why she's there.
No.
Like, she's with David Sims, who lives in Houston. We find that out later on. Yeah. Like, Houston's a big city. I can understand her being there.
You lived in
Houston. All the money.
Yeah.
David Sims would have all the money. Yeah.
And why would she set up her practice in Salome, Texas?
No, it's insane.
This doesn't make any sense. Why is she there?
How many people are getting therapy in small town West Texas?
Well, that one lady who was crying, and then Costner.
Too. Right. Don't you feel like they just got out the Bull Durham script and like things that happen in Bull Durham, like why Sarandon was there was kind of explained better.
She was there to fuck the players. That was her. She was a baseball Annie,
but she also inherited her house. There was a reason for her to be in. And Durham is not Salome. Durham is Durham.
It's a real town.
And this, they're like, okay, well, we're gonna make him in West Texas, so we need the woman to get in there, and we'll just make her a therapist. Like, it just seems like all they were trying to do was tweak.
Yeah.
The Bull Durham for like still give Costner his soliloquies, you know, still do this, but they just kept tweaking.
The way they dressed her was horrendous. Like the shirts that would match the golf hats. Like what the fuck was she wearing? It was awful. He's supposed to be a teacher. She shows up for a lesson. The lesson lasts roughly 4 minutes and consists of her hitting driver twice off the literal dirt ground. What kind of no wonder this guy can't make a living.
And then he starts giving soliloquies. That's the lesson.
Yeah, he's like, golf is like a golf to me is like a poem. And he's like goes through this whole like fucking just blowhardy bullshit about golf. Hey, fuckface, how about you show her a grip?
I was going to say, let's talk grip and stance. That's where every golf lesson in the history of the world has started, with grip and stance, not with a poem. You're not Miyagi. Show her how to address the ball. Show her how to hold on to the club. Show her how to align herself to the target. And then you can start talking.
Yeah, look, I'm not. Hey, I can barely swing a club, but I know that usually if you take a lesson, they start you with a decent loft, like a 7 or 8 iron. They don't bust out driver and, hey, let me see what you can do with that. Nobody can fucking hit driver. Like, it's an insane proposition. Again, where were the men that were supposed to be making this movie? Wouldn't anybody say this is not how you teach golf? We can make this movie and still have it be cute or whatever and still have them be flirty, but have it be more realistic. Let's find one patch of grass somewhere and have her hit a fucking wedge off it. Like, let's actually make this look like she's really taking a lesson. It's insane.
Well, they also had Tim Robbins pitch in Bull Durham, so right. You can't expect too much.
He's one of those actor dudes.
They're missing some of these things, and that was one of the things.
He gave off real thespian vibes on the mound.
Yeah, he really did.
But Costner, I did a quick Google search. It said he wasn't a big golfer before this movie, but like, yeah, he's an athlete. Like, yeah, he just carries himself like a fucking athlete.
He can swing a club. Unlike his adversary, the heavy in this movie, played by Don Johnson. Now,
who looks the part, not in action, but he looks the part of a pro.
He does.
He has that vibe.
He does.
He has the swagger of an asshole pro. He absolutely does. Yeah. The problem is he's 5'0" or whatever he is.
Yeah.
And he swings a golf club like you would expect a guy that spent a lot of time acting would swing a golf club.
He swings a golf club like a guy who sat next to Tubbs in a
sports white Ferrari.
He's been busy
and fucking Melanie Griffith.
Right. He's been busy swinging the other club. He is rumored to
use.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a swordsman, is he?
What do you think the internet has for Don Johnson's height? Because I have a number here. I've seen a number.
Well, I'll say the internet's got him at 5'11".
Okay, so but I don't know how this is. The internet usually too high? Is that what we're
going
with?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. So then, yeah, I'll say the internet has him at 5'8".
Yeah. Exactly.
Costner towers over him, and I think Costner legitimately is in the 5'10 range, 5'11 range.
Yeah. So I've actually stood next to Kevin Costner.
Big flex.
He came to watch us play baseball because he's a Fullerton baseball guy. So he was at the game, and I stood right next to him. He's like 6 feet tall. He's not a small person at all.
You towered over him.
Well, I'm bigger than that.
Yeah.
But Don Johnson is not 5'10", if he's probably not even 5'8".
No, the internet has him at 5'11".
Not a chance.
I told you, everyone questionable, it's just they get rung up at 5'11". Tom Cruise, they know they can't ring up a 5'11", so you'll see 5'9".
Yeah, they say 5'9" for Tom Cruise.
But most people that you're like, hey, that guy looks pretty short. What is he? And it always says 5'11". It's like, no fucking way.
Yeah, it's a standard height. But I mean,
if everyone was 5'11", then why when someone who is just moderately tall, like you'll get an actor that might be 6'1 or 2, they look like they're 6'10".
Yeah.
You know, why none of those guys are 5'11".
So like,
none of
them. Like, I think like Clooney and Brad Pitt are like 5'10", 5'11". And they always are the tallest guy in any movie that they're in. They're always much taller than everybody else. And Don Johnson is about the same size as Cheech in this movie.
You're right. And Cheech is legendarily like 5'3".
Yes, Cheech is tiny. And Don Johnson's like marginally taller than Cheech.
I'm not saying his character was flawless, but don't we all just... I mean... Don't you just feel good when you see Cheech Marin?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not
he's great.
Yeah.
Like, he's the best character in this movie by a mile. He's
delightful.
Yeah. He's great. He's funny. He actually has some chops in the movie where he can give you a little bit of a performance. Yeah. He was good. He was the only one that was Costner's just being Costner and Don Johnson's being a dick. And, but Cheech is like doing a character. It was pretty good.
Don Johnson's
he's great. Got some good sass.
Now, you guys can explain something to me. And Trav, you're a golf guy. So Don Johnson shows up and we learn that he and Tin Cup, and we'll get to the origins of the stupid nickname Tin Cup later. But we learn that he and Roy were college teammates at the legendary University of Houston golf program.
With Freddie Couples,
guys,
right?
Freddie Couples, I believe Trav's good buddy Steve Elkington matriculated there. Like
Ray Brown.
They churn out golfers at the University
of Houston. Tons of them.
So they played there.
Elijah Wan. Clyde Drexler.
Also him. Yes. Yeah, yes. David Fuzzy Klingler. Zeller. Yes.
Fuzzy Zeller went there.
Yeah. All of them.
Wade Phillips.
I don't think those guys were on the golf team, though.
Like, Wade Phillips attended a university.
The Quaid brothers went there.
The Quaids? The Quaid brothers. Oh, yeah. They're Houstonians. Yeah.
I think we're bearing the lead that Wade Phillips was on a college campus.
I mean, of course he was.
He wasn't there to learn, Travis. He wasn't there to learn.
He was probably played.
Without a helmet.
Don Johnson, David Sims shows up and he's like, hey, Roy, you know, we played together. He goes, I got this charity golf tournament in Houston. I'm going to need you because, you know, the course inside and out, you're one of the best players. You shot 59 there. You're that good. And he's like, I don't know, man. I hate your guts. He's like, all right, I'll do it. And he's like, whoa, hold on. You're not going to play. He goes, I'm going to need you for the loop. He goes, I got $100 for you to loop. And then he goes, plus 5% of any winnings. And I'm like, there's no fucking winnings in a charity golf tournament. There's no purse.
You get to take the money from the charity.
Yeah, they're stealing from children. This is like Trump's fucking auctions. Like, they're lining their pockets with people's donations. What the fuck is that? Is there a way to explain that, Travis? You understand golf.
I don't know if they like are going by and taking money out of the kid in a wheelchair's bucket as they're going to the parking lot. I don't think it's like that. But yeah, what they'll do is they'll have a charity event and they'll have a bunch of prize money that corps throw in so they can get the players to actually show up, because the players aren't going to show up to do right by.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's how all those things work. They all have charitable contributions attached to them, but there's actual prize money too.
Really?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
I know that from all the like running races and all the different like triathlon, any sort of anything I've done, there's some charity, but yeah, there are prizes.
Fair enough.
So like the tiger thing that they do over in the Bahamas, that's a charity thing, right? Where they donate some money to the locals or whatever it is, but you still got to pay the guys to come and play or they're not coming.
Don't you trade off? You're like, I'll do your charity tournament. You do my charity tournament. I didn't realize
there's still money.
Right. That makes sense.
So I watched this last night. And I had a couple of glasses of bourbon, and I didn't take many notes.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't take many notes because I really just have two notes. And the first one was, any movie asking for Craig Stadler to act is very vulnerable.
It's great.
Hey, and Molly, some of the guys in the locker room were wondering if maybe you could do for us what you've done for Tin Cup.
I thought
he was great.
Yeah, my second note was, I think Tin Cup is like the golf version of Pepe Le Pew, because the first half he's just like chasing after her, like, I want to have sex with you. And she's like, yeah, I'm taken. Like, this is a movie that would have to be really recrafted. This was very Me Too-ish, the first half of this movie. Yeah. And then she just becomes a fuck machine for him. But at first she doesn't want it, and that's all he can do.
Well,
yeah, he's not terribly likable. Like, guy in Bull Durham, the Crash Davis, is a likable guy.
Yeah. He's a charmer.
He's a charming, educated, kind of very, very likable guy. Roy McAvoy is just a lecherous loser.
Yeah.
He's really gross. He's a homeless, lecherous, lives with Romeo in the RV behind the driving range in Salome, Texas, loser.
He's a homeless alcoholic. What does she see in him? Like, why would she ever? She's
good looking.
She's dating a top 10 player who's also good looking.
Yeah, that's true. Who's better looking than Don Johnson?
He's gorgeous. And that dick.
Practicing psychology in Salome. She makes bad choices.
Well, she does talk about that because she was trying to sell condos in Corpus Christi. Yeah, and the bottom damaged. Fell out.
I mean, so that's what we're learning. She's damaged.
She got one of those quickie University of Phoenix degrees and set up shop. So it's probably, you know, she couldn't work in New York City. She had to go where her skills were valued, and that happened to be Salome, Texas. In addition to, you brought up Craig Stadler, the walrus. Gary McCord was also there, and Gary McCord was, I read this thing that our buddy Greg Fisher sent me. Gary McCord and Peter Costas were like the technical advisors for the golf. And they wanted to get the real players there to play in the U.S. Open, like Peter Jacobson and all them. And none of them, all of them wanted like 50 grand. Show up. They're like, their agents are like, oh no, I'm not doing this if I can't get paid. And they wanted to pay him scale. So Gary McCord, look at his mustache. The guy is
creative facial hair.
Yeah, he's dealed up to the hilt. Like, if there's deals aplenty on this guy, and you could tell by his mustache. He was like, look, we'll pay these guys scale and I'll get them to show up. He called all their wives and was like, hey, how would you guys like to have dinner with Don Johnson and Kevin Costner? And they were
that's a pretty good move.
All the wives were like in. So they all showed up, and then Costner and Don Johnson really like charmed the wives over dinner, and then they shot the next day. Yeah.
They got one of the guys they definitely got, Phil Mickelson, before he grew the Mickelsons. Yes. Yeah. And then before he went on HGH, and now he's all jacked.
I mean, he still kind of did have some fat little titties. Like, you could see him
in this movie. He did?
Yeah, he was. He was like in his early 20s, but they were there.
You forget that he's been around for that. I mean, you know, because he's 50 something and he's still a part of your regular sporting life. Yeah. But he was a baby in that movie.
Yeah.
He looked like it. That was one of the few golf things that kind of jumped out, because most of these other guys were, you know, relevant in the 90s. He's the only one that became a big deal. And you suddenly like, oh, right. This was right before Tiger ruined Phil Mickelson for the first 10 years of his career.
Yeah.
To me, Jacobson was the biggest draw in 1996, because the bar I worked at had Jacobson on Golden Tee. He was like the sponsor that year on
Golden Tee.
He was a big name.
I think he has a stake in Golden Tee, by the way.
Oh, Peter Jacobson's Golden
Tee. That must be so much money.
Well, it's like Madden. Yes. It's like Madden. You want my name on it, you give me a piece of the company. It's like it's like Shaq doing commercials for the General. He's like,
those fucking commercials.
I'll do it for 20% of the company. That's how you get me in a commercial. He's not stupid. So Don Johnson clearly had not swung a golf club before, although he claims, via the notes here, that he was an 8 or 9 handicap when they started the movie, and at the end of the movie, he was a 3.
Let me help Don Johnson with something here. Yeah. You lie about your golf game in the other direction.
Right. Yes.
You don't lie about being good and when you're terrible. You lie about being not very good when you're actually pretty good. That's how you do that.
Well, especially when everything's on film.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
It's not a radio play. Like, we see what's going on here.
I wanted to pull every string that I could think of. And I'm thinking, okay, Don Johnson thinks he's a 3 handicap. No way. Is there any way I could ever find a way to play him for my house?
Yeah.
Because I will beat him. There's no way. If he's giving me shots, I'm going to wreck that guy.
Well, because
he's not a 3 in his wettest dreams. Yes. It's just not happening.
Because he's going to show up and be like, I'm a 3. And you're going to show up and say, I'm about a 10.
Well, and I mean, he would buy that, because he'd go, oh, okay. Because he doesn't get how the game's played.
You know what he really is like Roger Dorn in Major League. Like, looks the part off the field.
Yes. Yeah.
Looks that specific prickish athlete guy.
Yeah.
But then he has to actually play the sport.
Yeah.
He would be that guy halfway through the first. I don't know what's going on today. I never play like this. I don't. Yeah. Something's going on. I mean, you know, I tweaked my back yesterday. I was getting out of the car and I felt something pull. That must be what it is. Yeah. That guy does not get it.
There are guys that have bad swings and are able to chop it around and go low, because they've just developed a shot based on that bad swing, but they are few and far between. Like,
he's not one of them.
No, the way he swings a club, you're like, there's no way that guy shoots a low number ever. So what's his name is a degenerate gambler. In addition to being a homeless alcoholic, Roy is a degenerate gambler. He's looping for David Sims, and like, he's employed by the guy. He's getting $100 for this loop plus 5%, and they're about to win. So what's 5% of $250,000? Ed, you got 800 on your math SAT.
1250. It's 12,500 bucks.
That's more than he makes in a year. Like he gives yeah, that golf
driving range.
Yeah.
What is it? I mean, what is it like? $5 a bucket? Yeah. 1996. Yeah. Dusty. Like he's maybe making $15 a week.
Yeah. No. He gives the whole property to Doreen for $10,000.
Like, right. You know. When are we going to talk about Doreen?
Well, we're getting there. Well, so
what yeah. I would say back to my point about how if Russo shows up, some oil guy's going to take her down. Doreen is kind of the type of stripper you'd expect in this area.
Busted.
You know what I mean? Like that's yeah. Like this is the caliber. I recognized her. She was she was in Get Shorty. She had a small part. She was the widow of the guy who was on the airplane.
Oh, that was a year later. So was she 101 years old when that movie came out?
I just thought she was the most realistic person because that's the kind of stripper you get in. What's that? Salome?
Salome. Well, now hold on. Because Kevin Costner, while yes, a homeless, drunk, degenerate gambler is very gorgeous, and there was a hotter strippers there that he could have easily been nailing, but he was with Doreen. I gotta ask. Well,
this was a mothering situation. He needed somebody to like make sandwiches for him and stuff.
I gotta ask. He was banging Doreen, who was extremely vintage. We should work out the details right now. Ed Daly, Doreen from the movie Tin Cup, his Kevin Costner's stripper girlfriend. How fucking old is this guy?
I mean, not really like trying to over exaggerate. She's got to be the double nickel here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say about that. You're being nice because she looks and. But again, we're not here to look shit.
We've done this in the past, and we've done this in the past, and we've been off by 20 years. Like, I'm trying to say, like, I understand the water back then was a little bit off.
Yes, a lot of cigarettes in the water back then.
Cigarettes, water, like, so I'll say double nickel.
Yeah,
like,
55.
Seasoned, but not elderly, like, just very seasoned.
Pretty old. Travis Rogers, 1996, Tin Cup, Doreen, who I'm getting a little vibe that you're a fan of.
Yeah.
How yes. How old is this fucking guy, Doreen, in the movie Tin Cup?
No way she's 55.
Yeah.
50?
No. 50 years old.
Because look, you gotta go back to what you guys were talking about. Right. In the 90s. Cigarettes. And keep in mind, she obviously wasn't born in the 90s. She came of age in the 60s and 70s, I'm assuming.
So yeah, there was some hard living, you're saying.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So you know, when you were 20, you looked 40. Yeah. I'll give her 50.
50. I've got her like 67. Years old, but
right. I'm factoring in the water.
I'm doing that too,
guys. You gotta look. She's in pretty good shape. She's not 60 years old.
She's 67 years old.
She's in good shape.
No, she looks 67. I'm gonna knock off 10% for the cigarettes of it all of the time.
You're in my range.
Yeah, yeah. So I got her like 61 years old.
Nah.
So this was 96.
Yep.
You were saying she was born in the 30s.
Yeah. Well, no, hold on. No.
She wasn't born
during she's pre-World War. 61, that would have had her born in the 40s. So Linda Hart is the actress's name who plays Doreen. Born July 5th, 1950 in Dallas, Texas. She's the age we are now in that movie. When they shot this, she would have been 45.
She looks good.
Yeah. Yeah, she looks good.
I like Doreen. I thought Doreen, she runs a business. She's taking care of herself.
She strips.
She's got a little mileage on the grill, but other than that, she looks pretty good.
She'll wheel and deal.
Yeah, I mean, she satisfied Costner for long enough. Guy that good looking, if they were together for a while, she was doing stuff.
Oh, for sure.
And by the way, Costner, because I put the movie on in mute in the background. I didn't realize he must have gotten a visit by the Plug Fairy shortly after. Yeah. He's the Island Green is really being exposed in this movie.
Plugs weren't invented in the 90s, were they?
They had those cornrow type. Oof. They look like a cornfield.
Yeah.
They just line you up like a Barbie doll.
Yeah.
When did Joe Buck OD on
I think that was in the 2000s when he got addicted.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think he got addicted.
But he was doing them over time. So he went from the OG where they slice the back of your head open and leave a huge scar. Don't go bald back there because you got a huge ass scar on the back of your head now. where they harvest? hey, we're going to staple these things in the front. But first, hold on. Hey, don't worry about it. We don't use the horsehair like they used 18 months ago. We got a new procedure. All we need to do is harvest a strip of hair from the back of your head. So they would do that, and then they would staple it in the front. Now, almost every movie, you're right about this, almost every movie you see Costner in, because we just recently did that very good movie about the draft, the NFL draft, where he's the GM. Yeah,
that's a great movie. Very plausible.
That movie was made by the NFL. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to our Draft Day podcast. That movie was made by the NFL, and every single detail of football in the movie is completely wrong.
There were so many trades to land a middle linebacker at the top of the draft.
Insane. Insane.
You know, that I was listening to your guys' pod. The story of the, you know, the, did you watch the film and all that stuff? You know, then where they do the trick. That was something they did pull on Jamarcus Russell, where they gave him, gave him a blank videotape. Yeah. And said, hey, make sure you watch these plays. We're going to ask you questions about him. He came and they said, did you watch it? I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'll answer. So you watch the whole thing. Yeah. And it was blank. Yeah. They gave him a blank tape.
Yeah. Where they put,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Where they put $100 in the back of the playbook or something. And then they get it back and the $100 is still in there. Speaking of how fucking old is this guy? I was thinking Costner, who is gorgeous. Don't get me wrong.
Beautiful.
I was thinking, hey, he makes a good showing at the U.S. Open. He can make a go of it on the Champions Tour in this movie. Boy, was I off, because he's actually much younger than Doreen. He's born 1955, which would have made him like 41. 40. Yeah, 40.
Yeah, 40 when they shot it.
40?
Yeah, I mean, he looks beautiful, but he looks beautiful for 48.
Yes. Here. Yeah, he's a good-looking 53-year-old man in this movie. Do you think it has anything to do with his diet? All you see him eat are like donuts, chocolate cake.
Yeah. Hot dogs.
Hot dogs. And then he shows up for a lesson with Rene Russo, whose boobs are never exposed in this movie. He shows up for a lesson with Rene Russo in the heat of the West Texas desert, and he's sipping on a carton of milk.
Yeah, that was disgusting.
Who does that?
Disgusting.
It's like Ron Burgundy.
Hey, milk was a bad choice.
Who runs
into 7-Eleven? Hey, I'm gonna run into 7-Eleven.
Let me get some moo juice.
Yeah, grab me a milk. Hey, grab me a carton of vitamin D. Oh, you need some for your coffee or something? You fucking brewing a pot? Oh, no, I'm just going to drink it.
Milk on a hot day in the desert.
Unbelievable.
When was the last time you chose milk as a beverage?
Never.
I mean, it's been 40 years.
I did it, but like, yeah, but I was, you know, I was still watching the Smurfs.
Yes. Yeah, you were still living with your parents and they made your decisions for you.
Exactly.
Even then, I was thinking, when I become an adult, I want chocolate milk all the time.
Of course. Yes, absolutely. Well, it's much better. It's much better. He drinks milk. What else? Oh, so he's just decides, like, Cheech gives him the idea. He's like,
What should I do? I lost, you know, he's pawning his clubs. He needs $2,000 for some reason, and he thinks he's going to pawn these fucking old ass Big Berthas. I guess they were modern at the time, but you weren't going to get $2,000 for them. And then Cheech
doesn't he snap his clubs?
That happens after, because he goes, he's like, what should I do, man? I don't know. And Cheech is like, well, I don't know. You could just win the U.S. Open. Like, that's plausible.
That's a thing you can do. Like, you just show up and, you know, get hot for a weekend and win the Open.
And then he hustles.
Maybe I need to set my goals.
Yes.
I think I'm going to win the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to do that. Then he hustles some guy on a golf course, and I don't really know the rules of golf, but he's teeing off by like pitching it in the air and hitting it with a shovel. And he's making his putts by pool cueing them with the bunker rake. Is that allowed in tournament play?
Well, look, of all the characters in the movie, not a lot of them are particularly plausible. However, the guy that he hustles at that course was great. That guy was a great asshole country club member.
No, yeah.
I've seen him in stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. But he was great getting hustled. I like watching him take his money.
Hey, fam. There's still a lot more of this episode to hear, but it's only available to our bonus content subscribers. Click the link in the show notes or go to theballerlifestyle.com and subscribe so you never miss a minute of the show. Broadcasting weekly, that's what we do, with Easy Ed Daily and a man Jay Stew and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Let's connect with my brothers, reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot.